Josh Nason, Josh Nason's Punch Out here, WrestlingObserver.com. It's Friday, January 10th, and I sound a little bit different because I'm coming to you from a remote location today, Key West, Florida, here for a vacation with a lot of college friends, 14 of us down here. Good time so far. Arrived last night, long flight to Miami, did not see The Rock. Of course, I come the week before they're doing the Bash at the Beach thing. For AEW. But anyway, fun drive from Miami to Key West. Ran a couple convertibles and been a lot of fun so far. Very tired and a lot of fun ahead, you guys can imagine. Anyway, I woke up in the middle of the night and I realized I had not posted part three of the Best of 2019 series. So here it is. Paul Fontaine and I talked for about an hour and 20 minutes about the third quarter, as it were, of the year in MMA. So it would be what, July, August, and September. And there was a lot of stuff. This was a great 3 month stretch with events, with results, news, all types of stuff happened. This was awesome. So I hope you guys enjoy this. And then we'll see you on the other side from Key West. Thanks. Alrighty, we are back post-holidays, episode three, or part three, rather, of our look through the year that was 2019. We still have a couple weeks ago, week and a half ago, actually 2 weeks as we record this, until the return of MMA, big-time MMA with UFC coming back. Little guy you may have heard of, Conor McGregor, coming back, so we'll talk about that more of as we roll here through the part three and part four, because he came up a lot, of course. And joining me, as always, Paul Fontaine, writer for the website, MMADraws.com, as well as some other projects and such. Paul, we're just talking off-air, as the kids like to say, before the for the audience at home, why don't you confirm that you had a good holiday? How's that?
Yeah, I did. I got caught up on a lot of TV, watched a lot of wrestling, especially in the last 2 days. And we've had a bit of a break from MMA, but I did that Bellator show last weekend. Was actually a lot of fun.
Yeah, which one was that? Was that the Eliminator?
The Japan.
Oh, yes.
Fedor, yeah. The main event was garbage, but I mean, it was fun. And, the entrances were really cool. And the whole show, like, they put on a big show better than, well, probably not KSW, but I don't really watch a lot of that. But basically, if anyone I watch, they probably do the best job with their big shows.
And we'll talk more about that on episode four as we round out the year. But yeah. Paul, this 3 month stretch we have coming up here, July, August, and September, as I was going through these, I think this is the most entertaining three-month stretch, I'd say, in a lot of ways, for results, for stuff for the future, and we'll get into it here. But this 3 months, and especially August alone, was notable for a lot of reasons. So I am definitely very, very excited to talk about this 3 month stretch, no doubt.
Yeah, it always seems to be for whatever reason. I mean, International Fight Week in July, I guess, is a lot of what they build to and then build for the rest of the year on. So that's probably a big part of it.
So let's get into it. Let's start there. We'll start with July, and so July. It really kind of the big event, big storyline or such of the month was UFC Fight Week, UFC 239. John Jones defending his light heavyweight title for the second time in 2019 against this time facing Thiago Santos. Split decision win, which I don't think a lot of people thought about going into this fight by any means. Santos, a guy that, you know, very similar to Anthony Smith, picked up a couple victories since changing weight classes, was knocking people out, just had a good look, not exactly a big pay-per-view draw or name or anything like that, not even really a big talker, but got the opportunity here and ended up blowing out his knee, but still hung in there for five rounds. Jones had difficulties and just was not on top of his game. This wasn't the greatest fight, but, you know, John Jones retaining his light heavyweight title again. And there's a lot of questions about what would happen to him. Also, on this whole card was really fun in a lot of ways. We'll get into this. We have John Blachowicz knocking out Luke Rockhold in Rockhold's debut at light heavyweight. Jorge Masvidal, this is really, honestly, the story of the night. We'll get into this in a second. Jorge Masvidal, the highlight reel knockout, 5-second knockout, flying knee
to the head of Ben Askren, setting up some big things for him in the year ahead. Amanda Nunes retaining her bantamweight title, again, a victory over Holly Holm. Just this head kick knockout that was just unbelievable. This was a fun stretch in this pay-per-view main card, knockout after knockout. And then obviously we talked about Thiago Santos destroying his knee. There was a skirmish in the crowd with Nate Diaz and Khabib Nurmagomedov, which didn't really get picked up on the main broadcast, but to my recollection, but was still noteworthy after the fact. But 239, again, the main event was kind of a boring fight, but it was newsworthy in for, you know, Santos's knee getting hurt, and potentially, you know, if these two guys would hook it up again, would it be any different? But really just this barrage of knockouts, and in such a short stretch of time, there was a lot of violence and a lot of pain, no doubt about it.
Yeah, this card delivered, you know, the main event aside, and I, you know, even with the main event, like, if you're watching with this volume off, and if you didn't know who either one of the fighters were, it would probably have been a really, really boring fight. But the fact that both these guys, like, you know that at any moment John Jones can just turn it on, and if he gets Santos vulnerable, he can just lay in the ground and pound, and it could be over at any moment. And Santos is capable of the one-punch knockout. So it kind of kept you on the edge of your feet while you're watching it, thinking, okay, at any moment anything could happen, and it just never did. But, you know, and the fact it was a split decision was, I mean, it was somewhat questionable. I think most people thought Jones won, but I mean, it was, you know, a couple of the rounds were close enough that if you gave him to Santos, you're okay. I remember Dana White saying at first that he thought that any judge that gave the fight to Santos should be fired. And then I think later on, he went back on that because, you know, he realized it really was a close fight.
Yeah.
And it kind of does show, like, you know, maybe Jones is starting to slip a bit. I touched on that a bit in our last talk, and it does make the next fight that he has a lot more intriguing based on this result. And it should mean that Santos gets a rematch. But again, after the way that this fight went down, I don't necessarily think that people are clamoring to see it again. But I mean, certainly he quote unquote deserves it. Whether or not he'll actually get it is another story. And then, you know, everything else you mentioned, obviously the biggest news was Masvidal and that huge knockout.
And I remember, I was thinking about this earlier, at the time I was bummed because, you know, I was really kind of hoping to see how Masvidal and Askren would play out over, you know, potentially 15 minutes. And then all of a sudden this knockout just kind of ends that, and immediately I'm like, oh, that kind of sucks. And then you just kind of get built, you kind of get swept in with just the, really what it meant and how big it became. And this was one of those things, obviously people love fast finishes, viral knockouts, viral video. And this was exactly that. This played to the mainstream, this played to everyone. And this really elevated Masvidal even more than, you know, the Till fight. And this just, you know, that Till knockout was great. And then this just kind of burst it. Like it was incredible how this over helped him, help propel him to obviously a much bigger fight, or even just being in the conversation. And this is a guy in Masvidal who for years was a really frustrating fighter to watch because it was split decision after split after split after split. And it seemed like every visual would be him just throwing his arms up like, I can't believe I got screwed again. And it's just like, dude, after like, you know, six straight decisions, most of them being split, something's got to change. And this year it did. And this was a perfect punctuation. This was amazing. It was fun seeing some of the clips afterwards that they actually drilled this before. You saw some clips from Mike Brown, yeah, and Dustin Poirier was talking about this. It was just, it became the story unto its own. And for Ben Askren, you know, this was the second fight in the UFC. The first one was obviously pretty controversial. And then to have this finish how it did, this cast some doubt on you know, his, I won't say his UFC legitimacy, but this, you know, how, if he was going to be able to hang in this division, then obviously, you know, what his future is going to be. So a lot of intrigue and a lot of questions after this one.
Yeah. And the other thing with Masvidal is even after the fight, just the way, you know, he got all that attention and, you know, he kind of took advantage of that increased platform too. Like his interviews were really entertaining. He had a few like really quotable clips, you know, like the extra shot that he gave after the knockout where, oh, that wasn't called for. And he said, oh, it absolutely was called for. I can't remember exactly how he put it, but
yeah,
it wasn't even so much what he said, it was how he said it. And you know, and even with Askren, like, yeah, you're right. You know, the first one was controversial and then you had this, but then you also had, okay, well, you know, Masvidal hit him with a shot that he probably wasn't expecting. And, you know, it was 4 seconds. I mean, really, what does that tell you? Yeah, it tells you Masvidal is vicious and has KO power, but it doesn't really tell you anything about Askren. So you still had that question of okay, well, you know, now that that's out of the way, what's going to happen if he has a real fight? And then, you know, and we saw that later on in the year, which we'll talk about later. But yeah, it was, you know, it really was everything it was supposed to be. And really, I think the way that fight was set up, either way, like if Askren would have won, it would have set him up for a big fight. So I think it you know, it worked out, you know, obviously best for Masvidal. I don't think Askren and whatever he would have done would have been as big as Masvidal Diaz ended up being. So.
And then we have obviously Rockhold and Holly Holm both getting finished pretty significantly. Rockhold, some question about whether or not he'll are fighting, and Dana White afterwards basically, you know, questioning whether Holm or Rockhold should fight again. But with Rockhold, you know, if he had defeated Błachowicz, and especially did so impressively, essentially the assumption is that he was going to get the next shot just because there's some backstory with AKA and Luke Rockhold, obviously one of the more, you know, well-known guys in the division, even though this is going to be his first fight at 205, looked fantastic physically, just Błachowicz, who is not necessarily known for his knockout power, just completely decimated Rockhold. And then Holly Holm, you know, this is one of the more overlooked title fights of the year, and Nunes just, you know, basically just taking her apart and just that head kick knockout, and it was cold, out cold, and... you know, her future, I mean, she's going to fight here again pretty soon, but, you know, does this kind of knock her from contender status, even in a, you know, even a very light division when it comes to contenders and so on? And, you know, even if she gets back there, there's this tape, and especially if Nunes is still the champion, it's hard to kind of get past this, tape. So this was knockouts, again, notable knockouts in both directions. And I'm very interested to see kind of what, you know, what is next for Holm and Rockhold. My assumption is he's not going to fight again, but it's this event, looking back, and it really changed the course of a lot of careers.
Yeah, I can't say I was too upset about Rockhold. I've never been a big fan of his, so to see him get knocked out like that was kind of satisfying in a way, and I feel like I'm not alone in that assessment. Like, there's, you know, he definitely has his fans, but I think sometimes he comes off real smug, and you know, he's probably got a career outside of fighting that, you know, he'll be able to make a lot of money, so I don't really feel too bad for him in that sense. And yeah, Holly Holm, I think, you know, she's always going to have fights if she wants them based off of the Rousey win. I think she could probably fight another 10 years, really, if she wanted to. And Nunes, I mean, losing to a fighter like Amanda Nunes is no shame. Even, you know, the way she lost is, you know, I feel like it didn't hurt her too much, and it gave Amanda another impressive win. So we'll see what Holm has left coming up soon. And I guess probably the only hope for her is if Amanda either loses or vacates one of her two belts, then, you know, Holm is probably just kind of runs to the other division and tries to, you know, to get a title shot again.
So let's go through some results, some fight announcements, and fighter news throughout the month, and then we'll get your thoughts on some things that stand out here. UFC Sacramento, the return of Jermaine Duranemi, knocking out Aspen Ladd, top prospect, in just 16 seconds. Bit of a controversial knockout there at the time. Uriah Faber returning after a long layoff, his home Sacramento. Big surprise here, knocking out Ricky Simone less than just 46 seconds. That was a huge shock in a lot of ways. Josh Emmett, another Team Alpha Male guy, with an impressive knockout of Mirsad Bektic in the first round. And I remember this also as well. It was a very scary weigh-in for Aspen Ladd. She was shaking on the scale. And it's one of those videos that made its way around. You know, Ladd basically kind of talking people off the ledge for a career afterward. But it was very scary to see when it comes to, like, weigh-ins, and, you know, especially this being in California. That was a big newsworthy story at the time. UFC San Antonio, Leon Edwards decisioning Rafael Dos Anjos, a good victory for him. Greg Hardy picked up a 45-second win over Juan Adams. Dan Hooker, very impressive victory, knocking out James Vick in this one. Walt Harris picking up a 12-second victory, a knockout over Alexei Olenek. There was a lot of knockouts in this one as well. And Leon Edwards saying he won Jorge Masvidal, but there was zero chance of that happening. Just, you know, it, unfortunately, you know, Leon Edwards is really nice win streak, doing all the right things, but is not getting any type of buzz at 170, and he's kind of stuck in no man's land for now. UFC 240, a pay-per-view that was not really heralded it was just kind of there in a lot of ways. And featherweight champion Max Holloway cruising by Frankie Edgar. This was a fight that they'd made it before. I got to get postponed due to injuries. They were able to make it again, and it was it was pretty dominant for Holloway. His first fight after coming back off that jump up to lightweight against Dustin Poirier. Chris Cyborg basically outclassing Felicia Spencer, who got the fight in essentially a month's notice. Cyborg's last fight in the UFC. We'll talk more about that in a little bit. Jeff Neal defeating Nico Price in a pretty fun fight in that one. And also Bellator 224, Julia Budd retained the featherweight title. I have no idea who she fought against. I have no idea what is really kind of going on with her. We'll talk about her as related to Cyborg in a few minutes. Some show and fight announcements. UFC ESPN, their October show getting Michelle Waterson, taking on Joanna non-champion, Yuana Jacek. UFC Copenhagen getting Jack Hermansson versus Jared Cannonier at the main event. Bellator 228 getting Lyoto Machida versus Gegard Mousasi 2. Ryan Bader set to defend his heavyweight title for Bellator against Chet Kongo, set for Bellator 226. UFC Boston getting Chris Weidman versus Dominic Reyes as a headliner. That will soon play into things as the John Jones fight. Let's see what else. UFC Mexico City getting Yair Rodriguez versus Jeremy Stevens. We're going to talk about that in a few minutes. UFC is looking at Ben Askren versus Damian Maia coming up, which was interesting. Interested to a lot of people. Something they want to see for a while. UFC 243 getting this headliner in Melbourne, Australia. Finally, we expected to get Robert Whittaker versus Israel Adesanya title versus title in that one. UFC Vancouver getting a pre-anticipated fight with Donald Cerrone and Justin Gaethje. Brendan Laughlin signing with PFL. He was the guy that essentially Dana White on the Contender Series was basically, he was grappling, and with 10 seconds left to go, he went for the takedown. Dana said, that's not how you do it. Big controversy. He ended up signing with PFL, so it turned out okay for him. Nick Newell, a guy that got his opportunity on the Contender Series, signing with Bellator. BJ Penn, it was announced by Dana White, getting one more shot at the UFC with a fight against Nick Lentz. Dana White also said he would not book GSP Khabib because GSP didn't keep his word. That is quite the statement coming from Dana White. Tito, the fight that everyone wanted to see, not really. Combate Americas announcing that Tito Ortiz would indeed fight Alberto Del Rio at some point coming up by the end of 2019. UFC releasing John Lineker, and he later signed with ONE Fighting Championships. Miles Jury signed with Bellator and immediately got a fight booked against Benson Henderson at Bellator 227. Chad Mendes retired after he spent 2 years on the shelf with due to USADA violation, and came back, lost, and was basically like, okay, I'm good with all this. Damian Maia saying he wanted to retire by the end of 2020. Tito Ortiz confirming that Golden Boy MMA is dead. No big surprise there. On the flip side, Kem Shanrock starting his own bare-knuckle boxing promotion, which apparently everyone has the right to do these days. Abel Trujillo, charged with felony sexual exploitation of a child, which no one likes to see those headlines. Bellator announcing a 16-man featherweight Grand Prix, which would involve a blind draw for the second-round fights. We'll talk about that more about that in a minute. Dana White saying that Jorge Masvidal is too big for Conor, and we'll see how that plays out. John Jones, this was a weird one. John Jones, turned he was charged with battery after an incident at a nightclub or a strip club, said he wasn't aware of the warrant. This was kind of a whole weird John Jones legal story, which they all tend to be. And finally, Dana White saying that, after that Cyborg fight, that she doesn't want to fight Amanda Nunes. And Cyborg saying that wasn't the case. And we'll get a little bit more of this into August. What about any of that stands out to you?
A few things. Going back, the UFC Sacramento, I kind of made the joke at when there was a bit of a controversy in the main event where it looked like the fight was stopped too early, and I said I think Herb Dean stopped it about 24 hours too late based on the weigh-in. She did not seem like she should be fighting. I mean, she looked okay coming out, but I do really feel like that may have played into it somewhat. I think he was looking for the first chance that she's in trouble, we're going to stop this because she probably shouldn't be in there anyways. It's just kind of the feeling I had. With similar in the co-main event there with Uriah Faber, in that, you know, people thought it was stopped early, but they, in that one, it was more like it was stopped early, but I think it was, there was no question that if it had kept going, that Faber was going to win, because he just swarmed him, and he kind of really had no chance. Julia Budd, she beat Olga Rubin, an Israeli fighter, who's probably the first and last time she'll ever get mentioned on this show. Although I feel like she's one of the most underrated fighters in MMA. You know, she's got a really long win streak. The last time she lost was to Ronda Rousey in Strikeforce. And the only person she's been beaten besides that is Amanda Nunes. So, you know, it's... you know, she's quietly rung up a long string of wins. And this, I think she has a lot bigger chance against Cyborg than people are giving her credit for. So, you know, we'll see how that plays out later on. I remember the Nick Newell thing because I was just randomly watching a Bellator show and in the prelims, and he fought in the main event of the prelims. And I was just like, whoa, I didn't even know he was fighting. And it's just, it seemed to me like that's something that they should have promoted a little bit better and everything. And then I texted Antonio Promise Thomas after the fight, because him and their training partners, and he said, yeah, you know, it was a good win, and he's really hoping he gets signed now. And it was like, they put him on the main event of the prelims, and he's not even signed. And it just, it kind of goes back to what we were talking about mm-hmm. earlier, you know, about how, you know, they're just, the way they do their prelims, it's just completely different. So I guess he was just kind of brought in probably to sell tickets, and, you know, he got paid a little bit, but it wasn't like, it was more about trying to get noticed as opposed to, this is actually a fighter we're trying to promote. And then, you know, he did get signed and he got a fight, and he, you know, he fought later in the year. We'll probably talk about it at some point. He didn't win, but he looked okay. When he didn't look as bad as he did on the Contender Series fight that he had. I knew that UFC had released Lineker. I didn't even know that he'd signed with ONE. So that kind of shows how under the radar that is. I don't think he's fought yet. So we'll see how that plays out. His style, I think, will really go well in that promotion, because their fights are kind of wild. And, you know, so I kind of probably going to try to go out of my way to see that when he does fight.
Well, they're talking about him and Demetrius Johnson. Like,
oh, that would be fun.
Yeah.
You know, like that would probably remind me of that Elliott fight that he had.
Yeah. Tim Elliott. Yeah.
Know? Yeah. The one with Johnson. That's probably my favorite Demetrius Johnson fight, you know, in terms of action. The one that springs to mind anyways. And then just, you know, it's funny. You kind of just mentioned in passing that Dana White mentioned Masvidal is too big for Conor. And with all the stuff that's been going on with Conor coming back and the big fights of Masvidal, I've never really actually thought about Masvidal and Conor too much. And damn, I want to see that fight. Yeah. Like, I think it would be so huge, you know, just the way that everything's kind of played out, the way it's built up. And obviously if Conor wins in a few weeks and Masvidal, I think at this point should just kind of sit and wait for that fight, because that's obviously the biggest money fight that he's going to have. Yeah. And probably the biggest money fight out there right now, aside from maybe GSP coming back. So
there seems to be stuff. There seems to be some smoke to that fire. That seems to be like when two people talk about the Cerrone fight, almost talking about like it's an afterthought, but there seems to be some like chatter about that, and Dana White has been kind of helping fuel that. So, you know, take that.
Well, his first step is always, no, fight's not going to happen. That's usually your cue that's what the next big one we're working on. And I guess that would make sense probably for July, given, you know, the timelines and everything. Mm-hmm. Although it does seem like a long time for Masvidal to be out, but it's worth the wait.
He's got a lot of money to sit on. That's for sure.
Yeah.
That's for sure. So let's go to August. This is a lot of fun for different reasons. It could pay, again, depending on where you are in the MMA fan spectrum, we'll kind of see what you think here. So UFC Newark, this was a afternoon show. Thank God for East Coasters. This is awesome, because it means we actually get to have a Saturday night back, which can be fun. And this was controversial simply because of the character that Colby Covington's playing. You know, big Trump supporter, the Donald Trump, the president of the United States, is completely behind him. His sons came to this event, main event against Robbie Lawler, and much to people's chagrin, he was dominant. And for a long time, Lawler fans hoping to see a slugfest or something really a little bit more competitive, they would be really saddened by this one. And I wouldn't say it was tough to watch, but it was a bummer in a lot of ways, because I was looking forward to a real competitive fight, and Covington did not make it a competitive fight, to his credit, dominating over 25 minutes, and essentially putting himself perfectly in line for a title shot. There was a afterwards on the ESPN ESPN desk. There was a, you know, him and Usman were going back and forth, and that was that made for some fun video as well. It's the only time I'll ever watch a UFC post show. You know, it's just like that was, it was a lot of fun. Also, there, he made this comment about Matt Hughes after, basically, I can't remember the actual line, but essentially, like, you know, something about a train, and it basically alluded to the joke about, alluded, you know, him being hit by that train was in his truck, and that got a lot of people talking. Again, the post fight with Usman. Also on the show, Jim Miller versus Clay Guida in this veteran versus veteran fight. These guys had never fought before. Jim Miller just quietly starting to put together a nice string of wins, submitting Clay Guida in just about a minute. Again, Donald Trump gave Colby Covington a shout out on Twitter. The Trump sons were there as well. And I bring this up because, and I think I actually mentioned this on a podcast I did earlier in 2019. No matter where you fit on the political spectrum, the fact that a UFC a sitting U.S. president or any U.S. president is actually admitting and acknowledging that the fact that UFC exists and is interested in any fight at all, that's a big thing. And I know people say they dismiss it because it's Trump. That's still a big thing. And forever, you know, the UFC, and I don't have to go into, you know, how long it's been, and you know, the sport getting shunned and all this stuff. But I tell you what, for the fact that a U.S. president actually acknowledged UFC, and he's had, obviously he's had coming to the White House, that's a big acknowledgement that MMA belongs on a bigger stage with the other sports and has the same respect. So, again, take that for what you will. To me, that's what I took away from this. But this was, again, not really a newsworthy show when it came to up and down the card, but it was notable for those things I just mentioned.
Yeah, I literally, like, I do remember the Jim Miller fight with Guida, but I didn't necessarily realize it was on this card, although that makes sense being in New Jersey. But the only thing that I remember from this card other than that is the whole thing about Covington. And I do remember watching the fight, and at the moment the fight was happening, I think it was 5 o'clock in the afternoon where I am, so 6 o'clock Eastern, which is a really good time for, you know, people that are just sitting down to watch TV. You know, maybe they just had supper, maybe they're just having supper, and you turn it on, and you know, here's the fight, and it felt like a really big deal. Like, it felt like a pay-per-view main event normally feels, and you know, and obviously with the Trump involvement, and then when the music started, and you hadn't mentioned this, but or maybe you did, but when he came out to Kurt Angle's WWE music, and I just remember thinking, like, I don't really like Covington. Like, I just feel like he's a try hard. And I do, like I mentioned on the previous show, that I liked the way Henry Cejudo does it. I just never really liked Colby Covington. And then when I got the Kurt Angle thing, I remember making a comment like, oh, okay, I've turned a corner on him now. I like this guy because he gets it. He's playing along. And then after the fight, when he makes the Matt Hughes comment, I was like, okay, I'm back to not liking him again. Because it was so clearly, like, obviously you don't really feel like, you know, Matt Hughes, you know, should have got hit by a truck or whatever. Like, you're just making that comment because you want people to be mad at you, right? And that's literally the only reason you're doing it. So, I just kind of like, okay. And I was back to, you know, but I guess I'm supposed to hate him. So in that sense, it made its point. And then, like, I wonder if, you know, like 10 years down the road, you know, we're going to look down back at this card and see, you know, maybe, you know, hey, there's one, maybe two future presidents or not another future president looking on this card, you know, with Trump's boys there. Yeah, don't get into that. But it is a big deal, though, you know, like to have a president tweet. Like, I mean, obviously it's never happened. It's kind of like, you know, when the NBA champions get invited to the White House or, you know, something like that. Like, it legitimizes it. It brings eyeballs. I mean, Trump's got, what, 3-4 million Twitter followers. I mean, they saw that, you know, they saw that who Colby Covington is because of that, you know, so.
Right. Yeah. I think how many did Trump have? It's like, actually it's like 40.
Oh, 40. Okay, there you go.
Yeah, it's way more than that.
Yeah, but I mean, that exposure, I mean.
So actually, I undersold it. 69 million.
But there you go. Well, yeah. So you know what? Like, that's literally more.
A lot of people.
Yeah, and they see Colby Covington, right? So you don't know who that is. You Google him, and hey, there you go. All of a sudden, he's a bigger star just because of one tweet.
The Matt Hughes quote, by the way, it's a strong lesson that Robbie should have learned from his good buddy Matt Hughes. You stay off the tracks when the train is coming through, Junior. Doesn't matter if it's the Trump train or the Colby train. Get out of the way.
Yeah, just, you know.
He said it. He said it.
Yeah.
Let's see. Let's go back to, what the hell are my notes?
241.
Yeah, there it is right there. So UFC 241, the rematch we never thought we were going to get, or at least didn't expect because everyone was talking about DC and Jones. Well, we got this here. We got Stipe Miocic returning for the first time since he was defeated by Daniel Cormier, knocked out, getting the rematch against Daniel Cormier for the heavyweight title. This is in Anaheim, I do believe. And Stipe Miocic, fourth round TKO, reclaiming his title. This was a very good fight, very fun fight to watch. And yeah, Stipe getting the knockout there, did this terrible dance afterwards. They said afterwards he immediately regretted. So that was pretty big, just the fact that the heavyweight title changed hands. And, you know, Cormier, everyone's kind of just ushering him, basically planning his retirement for him and how he's going to do this and do this and do this, and kind of saw this in a lot of ways as an afterthought, I think, because it's just a result of the first one. But Stipe coming through and showing he's still, I think, one of the more undervalued, underrated fighters in the game, especially when it comes to just in a lot of ways. I think the fans of a certain ilk have kind of taken to him, but I don't think he's become a wider mainstream draw. And I think a lot of that's his own doing, how he promotes fights, interviews, all those type of things. But as of right now, still the heavyweight champion of the world, and looking setting up what looked to be a nice trilogy fight between them and probably Daniel Cormier's exit from the sport. Also newsworthy on the show, the return of Nate Diaz officially. He came back. And this was a dominant win over Anthony Pettis. Masvidal was in the crowd, and they started to basically kind of set this up. He mentioned Masvidal. Didn't mention the BMF title in the post-fight promo in the cage. Afterwards, backstage at the press conference, did actually bring up this idea of a title. That kind of helped get some momentum. So you had the seeds of what would eventually be a really big thing for November. But Diaz coming back, going into this, there was this whole controversy over a potential USADA violation. That was just a complete PR disaster from the get-go with how it was handled, how it was brought up, and essentially, almost a week out from this fight, a little over a week, everyone's like, is this still going to happen? Because there was questions about it, people kind of rolling their eyes. And, luckily we got it because it turned out to be really interesting. Yoel Romero versus Paulo Costa. This was an awesome fight as well. Paulo Costa picking up the victory here. These two guys look like He-Man action figures in there. Corey Sandhagen, a prospect at 135 that I think a lot of people expect to make some big waves if he gets the right fights coming up in this year ahead. Defeated former top contender Rafael Assuncao. And again, I mentioned that the BMF title was born on this night. And 241, this was another UFC pay-per-view that delivered really in a year that a lot of pay-per-views for them delivered, especially during this last half of the year. This was one that back-to-back-to-back, I mean, these were notable fights with nice finishes and were things that set up some interesting storylines for the rest of the year.
Yeah, I think when Diaz did his post-fight promo, like he said something about a title, but it wasn't like he was very vague, and he's kind of hard to understand at the best of times. But I do remember watching that interview, and then I made the comment on Twitter, and then I made it in our Facebook group, and then someone copied it from our Facebook group and tweeted it, and somehow Dave Meltzer got a hold of it and retweeted it, and it literally got more impressions than anything I ever got mentioned on Twitter. And it was basically the most valuable title in UFC is the one that Nate Diaz thinks he has.
Yeah.
And because it was literally like as soon as he claimed he was a champion, all of a sudden, yeah, that's the belt everybody wants, even though it doesn't exist, because it's the big money, right? And also because Diaz is that guy that nobody is really terribly afraid to fight. Like you might lose, you might win, you probably got a better chance of beating him than most top guys, but you're going to make a lot of money. So he's a perfect opponent. Kind of like Michael Bisping used to be, like big mouth, big, a lot of interest in his fights. Connor, obviously, is another one, although I think he's more of a top tier fighter than Nate Diaz ever was. But yeah, that was good. The dance that Stipe did. He ripped that from, and I don't know if it was deliberate, although I think it may have been, but it's the one Valentino Shevchenko would always do. After her win. So I DM'd you a GIF of Valentina doing it. It's the exact same dance. So I think she even tweeted, nice try, Stipe, but stick to fighting or something like that. And then, yeah, that Romero Costa, like that, I mean, that's easily was my fight of the year, especially round one. But I mean, they did, they never really slowed down all that much, but I mean, there's no way they're going to keep up that round one pace. But it was literally like both guys went down. Like anybody that did, everybody's listening to this has seen it. But if you have, for whatever reason, haven't, like, go watch it. I'm sure you can find it on YouTube. It's definitely on UFC Fight Pass. But it's just an incredible fight, and literally like almost like Fry Takayama in a way. Just this generation's version of that. It was a lot of fun, and honestly, like, I remember people, you know, at the time it was like, I think it was a split decision and didn't matter who won because they both won. I think Costa won, but literally, like, it really didn't matter.
Yeah, both guys were made after that. Well, Romero, to an extent, was made already. One of the more interesting fighters. It seems like every fight he has, something controversial happens. But yeah, Costa picking up the win here and got injured. So, but many people expect that he's going to be probably the next guy in line for Israel Adesanya, because due to the injury and all that. But this is again one of those pay-per-views that that mattered. It delivered, and the prelims were good. So big thumbs up for 241. And then finally, Paul, cha-ching, cha-ching, somebody hit the lottery in China after years of WWE trying to break through there and make some big, big headway. Every fight promotion, all this stuff, everyone wants to get into China. We've been hearing this for years and years and years. And finally, UFC Shenzhen, a event that was on very early in the morning, Weili Zhang finally hit the lottery for the UFC by delivering a not just a decision win, but a TKO win in 42 seconds over a recently minted champion, Jessica Andrade, the second straight fight that the strawweight title was defended on enemy territory, that the challenger was getting the hometown fight. And this was, this was no doubt. I mean, Zhang just went in there and wiped up the floor with Andrade. But yeah, this was, and I mentioned it before that, the podcast I did with, and I keep forgetting the guy's name. We talked about all about MMA.
I listened to it.
Yes.
Yeah,
and it was so interesting in terms of, like, even before this, to essentially what it would mean for them to get a UFC champion. And obviously, there's still the whole thing about male females and all this stuff with, a male champion may be able to do better, but obviously a female champion, they'll take it. And now they have this opportunity with Weili Zhang, who was someone they kind of brought along. You looked at the trajectory, and now you kind of look back and this, they had her on these specific cards. And I remember that he was pay-per-view. I don't think it was a main card, but it was definitely like a prelim. But the positioning was very interesting. You could see that they were building this for months and months and months. And then she cashed in. And now the UFC finally has a champion over there. And we'll see what they do with it. But now we get to see basically how an organization that has a champion there, and a legit one at that, how do they cash in on it and make it matter? And this is their opportunity. And yeah, we get to see how this thing plays out.
Dan Shapiro.
Yes, that was his name. Yes.
Yeah.
Is his name.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, other than Yao Ming, I mean, really, I don't think there's been a bigger Chinese success story in what is essentially a North American sport, I would think. Obviously Yao Ming in the NBA. This was, you said very early in the morning. I covered this for the website, and it started at 1 a.m. my time. So I went to bed at 10, woke up at 1, stayed up through the night, watched the show, and it was a good show. Like, it was a great atmosphere. There was a lot of finishes on the show, a lot of people you hadn't heard of, but you're going to get that on those overseas shows. But there was some names on there, but it was really, like, it was all about the main event, and the just the knockout and the reaction of her and the crowd was something that you rarely see. And just like I compared a little bit to that, you know, like Emily McFarlane doing her walkouts on those Bellator Hawaii shows. But more than that, for me, it reminded me of when Conor McGregor knocked out Chad Mendes, because I was in the building and there was the section I was in was, I think, literally all Irish fans. So it was like that's how they reacted was how the fans in China reacted when Weili Zhang won the belt. But the difference is no one expected it, I don't think. Like people... They, you know, she had a chance, but Jessica Andrade looked really good in winning the belt, and Weili Zhang had, you know, she had a great record, but she hadn't really fought anyone of that caliber. So it was just that whole combination of things, and then to have it happen in China, and like you said, you know, like this, they've been trying, and they've got their UFC Performance Center set up there now, and there's a lot of Chinese fighters coming up. Every time they do a show in that part of the world, whether it is China or South Korea or even, you know, some Australia, Japan, like they always seem to have these Chinese fighters on the shows, and they're very entertaining fighters, and they win more than they lose, and I think that's good matchmaking in a way, but it's also, you know, they're probably good fighters too. And I'm very, very interested in what the future holds, because if she may not be the only one, there's a few fighters coming up in various divisions that, you know, I think that was the division that had the quickest path to a title shot. But they're definitely in the next 2 or 3 years, we could and probably should see, you know, at least another one or two Chinese fighters getting title shots.
Interesting stuff. Weili Zhang, the first one. And yeah, like I say, we'll see what the UFC does with this. So let's go over some other results and news from the month. We start with the results. UFC Uruguay, you mentioned Valentina Shevchenko defeating Liz Carmouche in one of the most boring fights that you'll see, especially with the title on the line, retaining her flyweight championship. Vicente Luque and Mike Perry, an absolute battle slugfest that rearranged Mike Perry's nose forever. And I believe it was a co-main event. It might have been third from the top. Also, Volkan Ozdemir knocking out Ilir Latifi. So some notable stuff there. But I remember this fight after. I didn't see this show live, but I just saw how widely panned that the main event was after the fact. And I actually still have never seen this fight, and I don't know if I ever will. So don't. Take that for what it's worth. Okay, fair enough. I won't. Nick Newell, we were just talking about him. He made his Bellator debut. Picked up a win, and this was a show that, I believe, in Connecticut. Every fight featured a finish. The main event was the much-anticipated rematch of Sergey Karantanov versus Matt Mitrione, the fight that ended in 15 seconds due to a nut shot on Mitrione. Sergey Karantanov, ageless, and defeating Matt Mitrione by knockout. Pretty convincing one at that. Bellator held a show in Milan, Italy, made up of three separate shows within a show, if that makes any sense, which it really doesn't to me, how Bellator does their stuff, but we'll move on. Stefan Struve decided to come out of retirement. Big surprise here, and announced he was going to fight Ben Rothwell in Washington, D.C., and also Alistair Overeem versus Walt Harris was booked as a headliner there. Eddie Alvarez picked up his first champion, or his first one victory, not necessarily, I put championship, his first victory in one, and I don't know if really that many people saw this, probably not. Dana White said officially they were out of the cyborg business, and immediately Scott Coker said, I'm interested. UFC 244, Amanda Nunes versus GDR signed for the Nunes' featherweight title. UFC Singapore getting the aforementioned Ben Askren versus Damian Maia as a main event. UFC 243 in Melbourne, Australia got Holly Holm. We talked about her a few seconds ago, that Ronda Rousey win. Returning to Australia to take on Raquel Pennington in a rematch there. Bellator Grand Prix final. Roy McDonald versus Douglas Lima 2 was scheduled for October. Bellator decided to book Frank Mir versus Roy Nelson 2 as a headliner. For some reason, I still don't know why. Carlos Condit, in a run of people coming out of retirement, decided he was going to come back and fight Mickey Gall on an ESPN show. Matt Brown, talking about an interesting 170-pounder there, said he was going to come out of retirement and wanted to fight Ben Saunders at UFC 245. Anthony Johnson said he wanted to return to UFC, but only at heavyweight. No big surprise if you've seen any pictures of Anthony Johnson recently. We talked a little bit about that UFC show that Cyborg defeated Felicia Spencer on. There was this video that aired, a conversation between her and Dana White backstage. It turned out being, some of the audio was doctored or was just rearranged to make Dana White look pretty bad. She apologized for that. She says her team, that turned about can be really ugly. This is before Actually, no, this was after Dana White had said they were not going with her. It might have been before, but just a, you know, obviously Cyborg and UFC didn't see eye to eye for quite some time. And Scott Coker is more than happy to scoop her up, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes. Cain Velasquez made his pro wrestling debut at Triple Mania and actually was kind of good. Showed some charisma and nothing that we ever expected to see out of Cain Velasquez. GSP said he had no interest in making that comeback fight against Khabib Nurmagomedov. Jason Mayhell Miller still around, getting a year in jail for vandalism, violating a protective order. So that sad decline continues. Dana White saying he wants John Jones versus DC3. And that tough, unfortunately for everyone at home, can't go away ever. That was his direct quote. He also confirmed that Colby Covington was next for Usman. I put confirms in quotes because with anything Dana White says, it can change at a moment's notice. Frank Edgar announced he was finally going to try bantamweight, moving down to 135 pounds. Cringeworthy Henry Cejudo saying he wanted to fight Valentina Shevchenko and become the first intergender champion, which got a lot of people eye rolling, as you might expect. A little bit of a surprise, Kat Zingano released from the UFC. They've been trying to book her for some fights. She was actually working on a project with ESPN and wanted to finish that up first, and UFC said, "Now we're good," and actually released her after a lengthy layoff. Antonio Rodrigo Nogueira talked about not retirement, says now he was not going to be retiring. He was going to be booked on the upcoming Sao Paulo, Brazil show. Bigfoot Silva signed with Bare Knuckle Fighting Championships. This is why commissions should exist. And when you get the right state, they kind of just look the other way. And Bigfoot Silva, unfortunately, decided to get back. And we'll talk about that more in a few minutes. Dan Hardy said he was back in the USADA testing pool. He's been kind of on and off, wanting to have a fight and make a comeback for years after his, I believe, his Wolfhart syndrome. Something going on there, but he has not fought in years. I don't know if we'll ever see him again, but he said he was back in the USADA testing pool to kind of get his mind into the fact that he might come back and fight again. Ronda Rousey nearly lost her finger on this show called 911 for Fox. If you've seen the pictures of this is a pretty nasty injury. Ronda Rousey nearly losing her finger there. Conor McGregor said he was in the wrong for a bar incident. He did this hour-long interview with Ariel Helwani that aired on ESPN. He said a few things in this, quite a few things. He would have fought by year's end. He didn't say who he's going to fight, but a lot of people thought it might be Cerrone or it might be Gaethje, but basically he had a fight booked. He said he claimed he had a broken foot in the Khabib fight, etc. So he finally did an interview, was not asked about the sexual stuff, sexual misconduct claims, the sexual assault claims, or anything like that. So there's a lot of people that had some issues with this interview. But he talked, and that was kind of the big thing. CB Dalloway got a 2-year ban from USADA. Paige Van Zandt got some news, some headlines when she said that she makes more money fighting on Instagram than actually in the cage, and that she'd be testing free agency after her next fight. And then BJ Penn knocked out in a street fight, and some footage that made its way around, and his sad decline continued. What do you think about any of that?
There's
a lot there.
Well, yeah, I'll start at the end, actually. Paige Van Zandt, funny, like when she made that comment, like it really does shine a little bit of a light on just how little some of the UFC fighters are making. Now, obviously, Paige Van Zandt is probably one of the better paid fighters in UFC. And for her to make that claim, I don't know if it's true or not, but I do know that a lot of these fighters seem to really, really want to fight for a fight, an organization like PFL, for instance, that gives a $1 million prize to win, you know, their 3-fight tournament. So, I hope that it doesn't lead to a lot of really talented fighters leaving because UFC is not paying them enough. The Ronda Rousey injury, that show she's on is actually one of Fox's highest rated shows. And she's actually, really doesn't have anything to do with her injury, but she's actually really good on that show. I watch it and I wasn't a big fan of her acting work that I'd seen previously. And so I don't know if it's just the WWE experience made her a better actor, if this was just a really good role for her. But she is really good on the show, for whatever that's worth. Katkins Zingano was kind of, I felt bad that she got released. You know, I believe she's been picked up by Bellator as well. And, yes. She should get some fights there. And then, just some of the stuff Dana White was talking about, it's like, I sometimes wish he just wouldn't say anything, just because everything he says we just assume is a lie. Some of it's true and some of it's not, and unfortunately at this point we just don't even know. So it's like it's almost makes it non-news no matter what it is, except it's news because Dana White said it. So it's just kind of frustrating. That's why I think I kind of, whenever I see anything, I just kind of tune it out and just wait for the official announcement or not. So yeah, that's about all I had there.
All right. We'll move on to September. Some news here as we round out this this part three. So the news, really kind of the big news, and really kind of thinking ahead to where actually how everything would play out. UFC 244, Madison Square Garden, their big show every November. Finally, unlike the year prior when they had to scratch and look under every rock and find a main event between two very injured heavyweights in Daniel Cormier and Derek Lewis, literally weeks before the event, which is just one of the more, I think, embarrassing things UFC has they've done, had to endure of their own volition, own accord in the past few years. Got a great headliner. No title on the line in terms of an official title. But Nate Diaz, Jorge Masvidal, they booked them as a headliner. And there's a lot of talk about, you know, potentially, you know, Edwards versus Masvidal and maybe an interim title. There's a lot of like machinations of this, but finally they made it happen. Nate Diaz, Jorge Masvidal is a headliner, no official title on the line. However, the BMF title, the head earmuffs kids, bad motherfucker title, baddest motherfucker title was a go. And this thing got built up on social media and to the point that Jorge Masvidal suggested that The Rock be the one to present the winner with the belt. And The Rock said, he said, you know, he would love to do it and, you know, had to make sure his schedule was clear. He definitely would be there. And then lo and behold, took about a week or so and they worked it out. And he's like, I will be there. And I was actually going to present the winner of this fight with a title. And this title became a real thing. Dana White talked about it, said there was going to be a belt created. And this became like a big story. And everyone's like, is this title going to be defended? And blah, blah, blah. And it was funny because, you know, at the time, I remember listening to Wrestling Observer Radio, and Dave did not like this title at all. Yeah. It was very similar to boxing and all this stuff. And I didn't agree. I thought it was a fun kind of promotional gimmick and something that was going to get a lot of buzz. And it was not, the title probably won't be defended again, even though, you know, who knows? It probably will be at some point. But it's not like a real title. And later on, of course, after the fight, Dave absolutely loved it. And so it was, you know, fun night, fun fight, whatever. So it's funny to kind of see him change his tune there. But the show obviously was at some fights getting added to it. It's Stephen Thompson versus Vicente Luque, and then Kelvin Gastelum versus Darren Till in the co-main event. But the BMF title, this was the first time UFC had actually really done this since I guess the super fight title back in the day was actually defended, but the fact that they created a BMF title and that The Rock was going to present it, this was, I mean, this past year, 2018, was absolutely insane pop culture-wise for any number of reasons, but this seemed like the ultimate in fan service. People wanted it, and Dana White gave it to him.
Yeah, I mean, it made sense. I mean, in the sense that, you know, you're going to have Diaz Masvidal on your show. It's got to be the main event. So if it's got to be the main event, it really should be a title fight. But there's no title on the line. So unless you're going to just decide, okay, we're going to have like a Intercontinental champion or something like that, you know, and really like that, I've actually heard people discuss that, and smart people that think, you know, that there's a place for that in UFC. I don't necessarily agree, but the argument they made makes sense. It's just I don't think we need more titles. But something like this, you know, and I really like, I could see it defended again. I mean, obviously you're not going to have rankings, but if you wanted to have rankings, I mean, you know, there's a number of names that you could fit in that kind of 145, 155, 170 divisions. You know, anybody in those divisions could fight. You know, you got your Tony Fergusons, you got your Justin Gaethje, your Dustin Poirier, even going down to Cerrone, Korean Zombie. You know, like if you were opening up to 145, like a number of guys that could potentially contend for this. And really, depending on the guys that's holding it, it could be the most sought after belt in the UFC. Or in the whole sport, really. So for that sense, it's like I think it was a really great idea. The fans wanted it, like you said, and then it just so happens that it's the right money thing to do as well. So it just worked out best for all sides. And it was a lot of fun, just everything about it. The fight itself, we'll talk about next time. But, and, you know, maybe, you know, didn't live up to everyone's expectations. But it wasn't even so much about the fight. It was about the two guys getting in there and fighting, but that was it. Like, once the bell rang, it's like, okay, we got the fight. That's all that matters at that point, you know. You just want to see these two guys hook it up, and they did. And it was for the BMF title, which is really cool. And then the rest of the show, like you mentioned, and it's like, it is what I talked about last time, the new way that UFC does things. And you mentioned earlier that they really did a good job, or the show's really delivered this year. And I think it's because of the way they were set up. It was basically, you either had a big money fight, you know, that has like the casual fans get interested in, or you had a lot of title fights where the hardcore UFC fans are going to be into. But either way, you got something for everyone. And then every once in a while, you get like a Rock'em Sock'em Robot fight, like Romero Costa, that just you kind of luck into, or Masvidal Askren with a flash KO. But even if the rest of the card is dog shit, you got the BMF title at the top of it, so it doesn't really matter. Yep. You know, and that's really all that anybody cared about on that show. And you're plunking down your $60 to pay for the show, no matter what's on the card.
And going back in the cage, UFC 242. This was a rare UFC afternoon pay per view. They hadn't done this actually in quite some time. Coming from Abu Dhabi, Khabib Nurmagomedov returning for the first time since that dominant win over Conor McGregor in October 2018, returning against Dustin Poirier to unify the interim and lineal, whatever you want to call it, the straight-up lightweight title, and did so pretty impressively. Submission win over Poirier, dominant victory. And this was vintage Khabib. This was dominant. This was him in front of not his countrymen, but a lot of people of his religious faith. And this was like a big event over there. Big win there, and then co-main event. The card itself did not have a lot of star power by any means, but Paul Felder in the co-main event edging out Edson Barboza in the split decision. That kind of tells you all you need to know about the depth of the card. But this was, again, Khabib getting back on the in the mix, so to speak, defending his title and setting himself up for what we know now is signed, which is the fifth time they've tried to make this thing, I'd be fifth or sixth, against Tony Ferguson coming up in April. But this needed to happen, and this was, I don't know what more you can say. This is vintage Khabib.
Yeah, I mean it, and right after I just said, you know, about how awesome all these cards were, I mean, we did have one that wasn't quite so awesome, but if you were a Khabib fan, and there are a lot of them out there, I've heard that his fan base is unique, and they buy his shows and nothing else unless he's fighting like another big guy, and then, you know, that person has their fans, but he does surprisingly good buy rates for someone of his level anyways, coming up. And this was, it was in Abu Dhabi. I think the last time they did afternoon shows was when they used to do those pay-per-views from England, in the mid 2000s. And back then we used to get them for free in Canada. They would air on, I don't know if it's TSN or Sportsnet at the time, but they would be on pay-per-view on tape delay, I think, right? In the States?
Yes.
Or would they
I think they would do both, because the pay-per-view, okay, they just kind of run all day. Yeah.
Yeah, so it was like, you know, and obviously the buy rates weren't that great, but they usually didn't have super big main events on those shows either. So, it was like you'd get your, like, Forrest Griffin, title defense or something like that or Rich Franklin title defenses on those shows or something like that.
Yeah.
But it was, it's been a long time, and obviously they probably got paid pretty well from the host, I would think. And then, you know, whatever they did, I haven't heard that this show did terribly bad, so it was probably in the, you know, in the range of everything that was not, you know, your super big, like, you know, your Masvidal Diaz or the International Fight Week show, probably just the rung underneath that. So, it was a Khabib fight, like you said, and no surprises there, and the Felder. I think, there was some controversy over the split decision win, but everybody kind of likes Paul Felder, so no one really got too upset about it.
Right. I remember at the time Dana said this was trending higher than McGregor and Khabib.
Yeah, Dana says
which
a lot.
Which no one believed that one bit. Yeah. No one believed that one bit. We'll go through some of the other results, and then I want to get your thoughts on these, and then we'll go to the some of the news, because there's some interesting stuff in here. So Bellator 226, this fight, oh my God. Ryan Bader, Czech Congo, title fight ended early after an accidental eye poke to Congo. Rampage Jackson, who's a teammate of Czech Congo's, went in the cage after Bader. I don't know if this even made air or not, but it was kind of just, you know, basically trying to set up some sort of, some sort of title fight for the future, which I don't think we'll ever see. But this was, you know, kind of a boring fight on paper going into this, and then ending with an accidental eye poke was just perfect Bellator. This is exactly what happens to them in these main events. UFC Mexico, now this was something that, this is Bellator-esque. Yair Rodriguez against Jeremy Stephens. This was a disaster. 15 seconds, and Yair got poked in the eye by Stephens accidentally. This was just chaos after this. People throwing beers and everything in the cage. Brandon Fitzgerald, the announcer, signed to hide under his desk, the desk for some reason, and this was just kind of a weird thing. Michael Bisping win the cage afterwards, interview Yair. Yair started kind of jawing at him a little bit, which I don't think would have been the smartest move. Eventually, the fight got rebooked for the Boston co-main, which I was very excited for because I was going to go there. And other than this, Carlos Esparza won, and there was not much else on the show, but this will be one that people remember, you know, for this. And unfortunately, these poor fans in Mexico City, like they're there to see Yair, their countrymen, and have it end so quickly. And just you have to feel for them, because I'm sure a lot of these people, you know, struggle to get to some of these shows. Obviously, the economy there is not great. And then have it end this way, I just felt really bad for them. Bellator Dublin featured the return of MVP, which against a guy, someone named Patrick Keeley. I don't know if anyone saw this, because the only way you could see it is on the app, or if you lived over in the UK. There was this controversy over Dan Mirgulata, was a referee at the time, basically kind of just shaking his head, and there was just this whole thing with him and MVP, and kind of injecting some personal opinion into it. And MVP didn't care for this, so it was just kind of a thing there. I think it stemmed from, you know, MVP was kind of clowning Keeley, who was just completely just dominating, and kind of just led to that. And, you know, afterwards, just shaking his head, walking away in disgust. So that was a discussion point. After that, UFC Copenhagen, Jared Cannonier defeating Jack Hermansson by second round TKO. Another victory by OSP with the OSP choke, the Von Prue choke. And then Gilbert Burns defeating Gunnar Nelson, kind of really officially knocking him out of contender status, which, you know, Nelson was, you know, this prospect forever, and a lot of people were very excited about seeing, just really just kind of got derailed with injuries and not a lot of fights. And, you know, this one I definitely kind of think knocks him down a little bit more. Bellator 228, Pitbull retaining the featherweight title against Juan Archuleta. There was this awesome selection show. I love this afterwards, a Grand Prix selection show. I thought this was... high theater. It was interesting. It was fun. And give me this stuff all day long. I thought this was great. Leonardo Machida defeating Gegard Mousasi by decision in a fight that was pretty forgettable. And then UFC Vancouver. This most anticipated fight, Justin Gaethje against Donald Cerrone. Gaethje winning by knockout in less than a round. There was this an underdog named, I can't remember his first name, a guy named Conley, who's a Canadian.
Tristan, I think.
Tristan Conley, an underdog against his flashy Michelle Pereira, who he's a very big dude, a lot of charisma, likes to dance in the cage, all these crazy moves, almost like pro wrestling moves, and Conley just dominated him and won. This was one of the more feel-good stories, because a lot of people don't like the Pereira stuff, but this was a fascinating fight to watch kind of play on the cage. The commentary, I remember, I really cued in on this. Some of the stuff that they were talking about. Todd Duffy, a heavyweight who's fought on and off in the UFC seemingly forever, finally coming back, had some comments about the media going into this thing, and ended up fighting to a no contest due to an eye poke in this one. So a lot of eye pokes, a lot of issues, but I thought these were some more of the interesting results of the year, especially given the time frame.
Yeah, the Bader Congo title fight was, I mean, it was awful. And I think when Congo got poked, he just kind of decided, yeah, I don't want to fight anymore. And it was probably best for all involved, because he was not going to win that fight, but it gave him the excuse of not having a loss. So hopefully they don't book that fight again, because I don't think anybody wants to see that. I remember the UFC Mexico just thinking that. I felt bad for the fans like you did, but the way they reacted while it may have been justified in some sense, I also thought that maybe UFC is going to think twice about going back there because, you know, when people's safety is in danger, like Brendan Fitzgerald, I mean, hiding under his desk, it sounds funny, but he really was, you know, in you know, he was scared. And I remember our old Todd Martin, who used to, you know, work for this site, he was covering the show Cage Side because I think he was down there for the Cain Velasquez thing and he stayed until this. And he said he's never been that scared at Cage Side either. So that was tough. Bellator, Dublin, yeah, another one of these shows that nobody got a chance to see. But I do remember seeing the Big Dan thing and just where he, you know, he raised the guy's hand and he was started celebrating. He just kind of threw his hand down, shook his head and walked off. And it's just like, wow. I mean, you just couldn't hide your disdain for this guy, could you? Yeah, the UFC Vancouver show that I mentioned the Romero Costa as a fight. I've heard a lot of people say that they really like this Tristan Connolly Michelle Pereira fight, just the way it played out, because Pereira clearly was a level above him. I mean, and in terms of size, he looked like he was two levels above him, because I think Connolly took the fight on late notice and was fighting up a weight class from where he normally does, but he basically just, you know, he weathered that early storm and he just kept fighting. The first round was Pereira looked like he was on his way to a 10-8, but he started to gas at the end of the round. He barely won the first round and then he lost the last two. And, you know, and it really set him back and probably got Tristan Connolly a job because, you know, really he took the fight on a late replacement and maybe he would have got another shot, but he probably got a UFC contract out of that. So good for him. And yeah. And I was real excited to see Todd Duffy back. And unfortunately, I didn't really get to see a lot of him. Hopefully he'll be back again.
I would assume so. We'll go over some of the other news and notes from the month. Chris Cyborg officially signed, quote unquote, the most lucrative women's deal in MMA history, which there were no financial terms, so who knows how accurate that is, with Bellator, and was soon announced after she's going to be fighting the aforementioned Julia Budd in January for the women's featherweight title. Dana White saying, officially confirming that BJ Penn would not fight again after that bar brawl video. He was actually released, so there's no way he could go back on his word unless he, you know, re-signs him or something like that. But it appears that the run of BJ Penn in the UFC finally and sadly came to an end. UFC Moscow needed a new main event. JDS versus Alexander Volkov booked initially, but JDS was out due. I put XXX here because I was actually going to look up what it was, but it was something internal, if I remember right, and I can't remember what it was. He's actually booked to fight again. But he was thinking about he might not fight again. It was kind of this weird situation. But anyway, so they needed something else to fill in there. So they moved the Sabit Magomed Sherpov Calvin Kattar fight from Boston to the main event. However, it's only going to be three rounds and not five rounds. But that getting the main event treatment in Moscow. UFC San Paulo main event, Jacare Souza making his light heavyweight debut against John Blachowicz, coming off that big knockout of Luke Rockhold. UFC 245 was announced for December, getting two title fights, Colby Covington versus Kamaru Usman, and then also Max Holloway versus top contender Alex Volkanovski for the featherweight title. Cain Velasquez wrestled again for AAA in their New York Uprising show. Endeavor, the owners of UFC, announced an IPO and then canceled it a few weeks later. Very interesting news on that if you want to do some more research. LeVar Johnson signed with another one of these bare-knuckle organizations. He was a Strikeforce fighter for a long time, and I believe he may have got a chance in the UFC. I cannot remember about that. I can't remember if that happened or not. Anyway, ended up going to jail for domestic violence, some really nasty stuff. And is out and signs for a bare knuckle fighting organization, which this just didn't really feel right at all. So we'll move on from there. David Branch suspended by USADA for 2 years and then released. Really kind of a disappointing return to him for the UFC after doing a lot of good things outside it. Dana White saying that Stipe DC 3 was for the heavyweight title. The trilogy was confirmed to be next, just didn't know when. And DC wanted it, and he wanted that to be his last fight. So we'll see when that gets booked. My guess is could be this summer, maybe. Again, depending on the whole McGregor thing, but wherever they put that, that's going to be a big one. Rashad Evans released by the UFC, and of course, considering return. That was one of the reasons that he was released after retiring and saying all the right things, deciding that he still had the bug to fight. UFC South Korea, their UFC's 2019 finale. Brian Ortega finally returning for the first time since that December defeat in 2018 against Max Holloway, set to fight against a Korean Zombie. We knew that fight would not happen. We'll talk about that more in the next show. Eddie Alvarez was announced to be out of the one lightweight Grand Prix. I put Let's Talk One here. I don't really know what I want to talk about one. Really just kind of that they exist. And I think I know what it was. Really this, you know, they have this deal with TNT. I never really see them on. I see some of the ads during AEW. But I don't really know if they made any inroads with these signings with Demetrius Johnson, Andy Alvarez. The Sage thing was a disaster. I don't know if their intent was to make a bigger splash in the U.S., but I don't see anyone talking about these fights. I have no idea what time of day they're on. I thought the TNT thing was going to be actually to show some of these in like a normal time slot. I have no idea if that's happening. I have it set on my YouTube TV DVR. It never picks up anything. So they exist, but they could not exist. It could be this thing built in a studio for all I know. I have no idea. We talked about the Bellator Featherweight Grand Prix selection show. Vanderlei Silva, for some reason, wants to fight in bare-knuckle boxing, even though he said he's shown signs of CTE. That's disturbing. And then Holly Holm, injured and out of that aforementioned Raquel Pena fight at UFC 243. So what do you think about any of that? What about my hot takes on one?
Well, okay, so I'm in Canada, so I think it's a little bit different here, but, you know, I obviously follow what's going on and talk to some people, and there's been some discussion in our Facebook group about this too. And I think what it is they have that app, the Bleacher Report, and so I believe the cards do air live on the BRL app. You said you don't know when they happen. Typically, they're Friday mornings, our time. So it's like literally they start anywhere from probably 6 to 8 a.m. Eastern, and they'll run till, you know, early afternoon maybe. Because we used to get them on the Fight Network in Canada, and I used to set a DVR for them, and I'd watch them when I got off from work. And then a few years ago, you know, when Anthem bought TNA and they started dumping all their programming, One was one of the first ones they dumped. So then that's literally the last time I saw it. They also have the One app that you can buy the show on, but obviously if you have BR Live, I think it's free. And then I think there was one or two shows, for sure one, and it was their big, big show that they had in maybe September from Japan, I think, where that show might have aired live on TNT, but it was literally like, I think that one was on a Saturday night, it started at like 11 a.m. or 12 or something like that. I do remember people talking about it. And that was, they had all their big names on that card. But that was the only time that I ever heard any kind of buzz about one of their fights or one of their shows. So, you know, that's what I know about that. And if I'm wrong, sue me because I'm from Canada and I don't know what I'm talking about. Some of the other stuff, I think LeVar Johnson made it. I do remember the name. His nickname was Big. Yes. I remember thinking that he was, you know, I used to like watching his fights, definitely regular on those Strikeforce Challenger shows that we talked about last time that were a lot of fun. He just never quite made it in UFC. And it's I was kind of almost sad to hear that he's still kicking around because I wouldn't wish that bare knuckle stuff on my worst enemy or even Tom Lawler. and then of course with just some place setting coming up, you know, that some fights we ended up getting, some fights we didn't, but it was nice to see that UFC 245 show, which was kind of a hardcore fan's dream, managed to stay intact, and we got the first two big fights for that show, and we later get a third title fight for the first time I think ever in UFC. That turned out to be a really nice show at the end of the year, and I thought it was really interesting too, and it's, I don't know if we'll talk about this next time if it would have made the news items, but with the UFC 245 that they actually aired it on ESPN just not even 2 weeks later. So I thought that was kind of cool. I guess probably just filler programming, but it was kind of a big deal. And the only other, the Cyborg deal, I mean, I didn't hear anybody questioning it. So whatever that means, like most lucrative women's deal, if they're talking without pay-per-view points, I mean, other than Ronda Rousey, I could see that. But you know, and if Ronda Rousey's base was not that much, but she was getting a lot of money on pay-per-view points, it's very possible that he wasn't lying, and Coker's got a decent reputation, so maybe he's telling the truth.
Yeah, to me, just announce a number. You know, every other sport announces the number. You know, it feels like fight rhetoric to me, fight promotion rhetoric. But
yeah, Garrett Cole signed the biggest free agent deal. We're not going to tell you what it is.
Right, you have to guess. You have to guess. Yeah, so actually, Lamar Johnson did fight in the UFC. He fought in the UFC four times. Okay. This was 2012 and 2013.
So right after the purchase.
Yes. So 2-2. He started off because he got brought over from Strikeforce, knocked out Joey Beltran. TKO win over Pat Barry. That was a good fight, if I remember that right. Two knockouts of the night. And then Stefan Struve, defeat by Stefan Struve, lost to Brendan Schaub. This is how long ago this was. And that was his last fight there. And then he fought four times in Bellator. And then that was it. So, yeah. So,
yeah, I thought he had been in Bellator too. I was going to mention that. But, you know, that was, he was still around in the Bjorn Rebney days.
Yep. Not a good dude. Not a good dude. I'll tell you that much. So, yeah. So that wraps up a very interesting 3 months. Again, we had a lot of, fun fights, big fights, big events. And really, you know, as we've talked about this year, really produced some nice pay-per-views, and we'll talk about that in our wrap-up finale show. But this was UFC started to get some of its swagger back, and maybe not as a huge mainstream entity. But however, things like the Masvidal knockout was big. Covington crossed a party line, so to speak, when it came to getting news picked up, and people were interested in him, and they were starting to see some people break through again. Maybe not as like, you're willing to plunk down $60, but at least it provided ESPN personalities to talk about and showcase. And with all these different hours that they have to fill, they were starting to get some of these guys there. And yeah, we say this a lot, you know, the seeds and all this stuff, but you know, some of these things are starting to grow fruit as the end of the year approaches. And some big things in 2020 based on a lot of these things that have happened in these past few months. So yeah, this was a really strong 3 months.
Yes, it was.
Good stuff. All right, Paul. Well, thanks again for stopping by, and we'll look forward to seeing you, talking to you next week, and seeing you in my head, talking to you next week about the last 3 months of the year, October, November, December, just like that.
Cool. Looking forward to it.
All right. Thanks, Paul. All right, big thanks to Paul Fontaine for stopping by. We'll do the part four of the year in review 2019, probably next week at some point. I've got a little bit of research left to do on that and to finish that up. But, it's more recent stuff, so what have you. Anyway, the 2020 MMA year calendar really starts a week from Saturday with Conor McGregor returning against Donald Cerrone. And it'll be a lot of, obviously, chatter about that. And then we're off and running 2020, so we'll get 2019 in the rear view soon enough. So thanks to all you guys for listening. Thanks to Paul Fontaine. This is Josh Nason. I'm going to head out to a rum tasting right now. Josh Nason's Punch-Out. Until next time, insert catchphrase here.